All right, welcome to the 2011 inaugural edition of the OTP cast. This is Edge along with Alan.
Hello, hello.
And boy, do we have some new changes at Ball State. Alan, what's your level of excitement for the Pete Limbo era?
You know, got to be honest, I'm a little excited, which kind of worries me. You know, with the last couple of years, I think fans have been kind of down a little bit in the dumps because of the performance in the field. I'm concerned the fact that now that Coach Limbo is kind of getting some excitement out of the program again, are people's expectations going to be a little too high for him? I think that's a legitimate concern for me. Anybody that thinks this team is going to come out and win 8 or 9 or more games, that's going to be a struggle, I think. You know,
mm-hmm.
Realistically, you know, I don't really know what to expect. If the marketing and the fever and the passion about this team kind of has picked up exponentially, which is good, but what I'm concerned about is the fact that are these, you know, students or Muncie people or Eastern Indiana people that are now kind of like, all right, let's go check out Ball State, are they going to come this year and see that it is a rebuilding year and kind of lose interest again? So I hope it works for people. I'm genuinely, guardedly optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, so good. I mean, he's done a great job. I mean, whether or not he's a good football coach in terms of the results in the field, I guess we'll find out in about a week. But, you know, so far, so good. He's done the best he can, considering that the interest in that program was just so not so good.
Yeah, in the past couple of years. We really didn't feed too well off that 2008 season, did we?
No.
Not so much.
You know, I mean, I think the problem, again, we talked about expectations in the last one. I think it's kind of the same thing. So many people got blindsided by the 12-0 season in 2008 that the expectations got totally and ridiculously blown out of proportion. I mean, even you and I, when we talked about the 2009 season, we were focused more on the 12-2 rather than the fact that there was not a lot of returning offensive linemen. There was, you know, obviously Nate Davis was gone. Dante Love was gone. You know, we sort of looked past some very critical things that most people could have looked at and said, probably not going to be the level. I mean, I think even when we were sort of pessimistic toward the beginning after the first loss or two, we were like, okay, 500, worst we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that did not go so well that year. And, you know, that's kind of what I'm talking about. You know, you have one good season, it bolsters expectations, then the bad season seems even worse. So what
sure.
I'm concerned about is, you know, if he goes out and goes 4-8, 5-7 this year, realistically, that's not a bad year. I mean, I think most people, at least that follow Ball State pretty religiously, are looking at anywhere between 4-8 on the low side and 6-6 on the high side in terms of where they're probably going to finish. And I think if Limbo clocks in at 500 his first season, considering where he's been the last 2 years, that's going to be a win. But what if the bottom drops out? You know, what if we have some injuries? What if something happens and we finish 3-9? What I'm concerned about is that's going to sort of taint his legacy. I mean, when hope was there his first couple of years, fans were ready to run his ass out of town, and he didn't have the success sort of before the 12-2 season. So, you know, I'm worried. I'm optimistic. There's a whole host. I think it's hard because nobody knows what to expect from this team. I mean, realistically, do you have any clue what to expect from this team?
To be quite honest, no. I mean, like you said, anything that happens this year is probably not going to surprise me. I would be absolutely elated if we could pull off a 6-6. Given our schedule, that's probably going to be the best we could do. I mean, to be quite honest.
Yeah, you look at the schedule. We have 4 non-conference games.
Mm-hmm.
And of those 4 non-conference games, I think, I mean, I want to say 1-3 is realistic, but even then, Army's not a pushover. Army was a bowl
no.
this year. So
you're saying the one we definitely have the chance against is Army.
Right, and I think we have a chance. To me, Army and Indiana on the same level.
Sure.
The thing that worries me about Indiana is that it's game one of the Limbo era. It's at Lucas Oil Stadium. There's a lot of other things at play there that make that game not a normal game.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, IU, they're going to be fresh coming into the game. They are not going to forget 2008, 42-20. That's not going to be an easy game by any means. And the fact that we're not at the Shoe, that's even worse.
Absolutely. So you've got, you know, South Florida on the road. Road games against BCS conference opponents don't go so well for us.
No.
For that Indiana game in 2008.
42-20.
right. So you got South Florida, you got at Oklahoma, then you have Army at home. So really the only non-conference home game is Army. Now, Army was a bowl team last year. However, they're one of those teams that if they even hit 500, they're guaranteed a bowl. So,
yeah, sure.
You know, I struggle to say they were a bowl team. If they were an independent, a true independent without a service academy affiliation, if they were in the MAC at 60, they wouldn't have gone bowling. So, but they were a bowl team last year. So mm-hmm. really and truthfully, I think Indiana, Army on about the same level. South Florida and Oklahoma, I think, 9 times out of 10, probably a loss for both those. So best case scenario, 2-2 non-conference. Realistically, 1-3, possible 0-4. In that, you're looking at 8 games in the MAC. The MAC, as we've seen, even in 2008, when we were very, very good, strange things happen in MAC conference games. I mean, the regular season, obviously, was 8-0 for Ball State, but you know, the Buffalo game and the championship game, just the random games throughout the season that were way closer than they should have been. I mean, strange things happen in the Mid-American Conference.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to sit back and say any of the MAC games are guaranteed wins. I think we're going to be favored in a couple.
Right.
I think the best chances for us for, you know, MAC wins are going to be probably Buffalo at home, mm-hmm. Temple at home, and Eastern Michigan on the road. But even with those, you know, Eastern Michigan's an improved team. And they beat us last year, didn't they?
Yeah.
So
I think so.
There's that. Part of me is very excited about this team. Part of me is inching closer and closer toward totally unrealistic expectations. And that's not good when you have a person who's supposed to know football, who's supposed to look at things very arbitrarily and say, yes, this is how I see it, or no, this won't go that well. And I got to be honest, kind of leaning toward, like, you know, 7-5, not out of the question. I mean, really, I look at the schedule the other day, and I think South Florida and Oklahoma are the only losses that I think are going to require something special for Ball State to win.
Mm-hmm.
But even in the MAC, Northern Illinois, darn good football team. Toledo, awfully good football team. I am worried. Not necessarily worried. Worried may not be the right
word. Optimistic, but
yeah.
A little concerned, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, because really we have no reason to be optimistic. I mean, if you had said to me, this team that you don't follow, right, that hasn't been dying, got you a little taste of 12-2, and then they had two awful seasons. So, you know, totally, you know, Team A, not Ball State, Team A, has a brand new head coach. They have a brand new system. They have lost their arguably biggest offensive weapon to transfer.
Mm-hmm.
They play at Oklahoma, at South Florida, a neutral site against a Big Ten team, and a service academy at home. And then they play a conference that universally creates chaos in terms of beatability. To me, if this was a Sun Belt team or a Mountain West team, I would say, man, 4 wins, and that's going to be a reason to celebrate. So I'm letting my fandom creep in here, and that's troubling, man, because if we are letting that happen to us, imagine the people that don't have the history of losing in terms of going through the losses that we have with Ball State.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, we should be two of the most tempered people because we saw 24 straight losses, and we saw the last 2 years up close and personal.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. But what I will say, I mean, kudos to Limbo, because this man is doing yeoman's work here. You know, he's got a fan base that is, you know, apathetic at best, a student body that is sort of like, hey, we'll come if you win, but really we're here for the tailgating.
Yeah.
He has a small but very passionate and dedicated, committed fan base that's going to be there no matter what.
Sure.
But it's that middle of the bell curve that he's reaching, and I think that's great. But what he has to do is follow up that reach with some victories.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you know, if he had last year's schedule or the schedule before that in terms of 2009, I would be very optimistic about this team.
Right.
This schedule, man, I don't know who scheduled it, but, man, Limbo needs to go have a little chat shit with those folks because it's not doing him any favors.
No, it's not doing any favors, but to be quite honest, two FCS schools in one season like last year, that's doing even less favors for you, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So
pendulum kind of swung the other way this year.
Sure, but hey, if we want to put up a legit program, if we want to be a legit contender, you got to play legit opponents.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at what made Ball State great when Nate Davis was there.
Yeah.
I think it's no small coincidence that a couple of years after they went on the road to Michigan, they went on the road to Nebraska. You know, those games build character for these teams.
Because sure.
It helps in your conference season, and it also gives you confidence going forward. But, man, oh, man, first year with this schedule, that's brutal. Man. That is tough.
Yeah. So we have the addition of Coach Limbo, and kind of shocking a couple months ago is that Eric Williams left.
Yeah.
I got to say, I was a little surprised at that and a little disappointed in the circumstances and the aftermath, to be quite honest.
Yeah, the aftermath is what kind of bothers me.
Uh-huh.
We had a player gave one story. The inkling from the football offices, no official comment or anything, but the inkling from the football offices is more so there's more to this than is being reported by you guys.
Right.
We talked to Eric first, and I think it's part of me sees the sort of contrarian view of a young man who may or may not have been coddled under the former staff, which has been what a lot of people have said.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a new coach come in that basically says every position here is up for grabs. No one is going to be gifted anything, and I literally don't owe you a thing.
Right.
You know, some players can hack that. Some players take that as motivation to work harder. It seems like, you know, I think about guys that are on the team now, like Briggs Orsma, Sean Baker, Adam Morris. Those folks seem to really thrive in that sort of, I'm going to prove even further that I deserve this starting spot.
Mm-hmm.
For Eric, I don't necessarily know if that was an impetus for him transferring, but it would be easy to make that claim, I think. I think it showed a little bit of lack of seasoning on Eric's part to be so verbose about why he was transferring.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, the coach and I don't get along, and he's sarcastic, and blah, blah, blah. You know, to me,
not everybody's going to get along with their coach, okay?
Yeah. You know, we talked a lot. I was going back and through and reading some old posts from a couple of years ago.
Uh-huh.
I remember when Keith Wormers, is his name? Keith Wormers?
Yeah.
From Michigan, transferred out of Michigan, allegedly, and he wanted to come to Ball State. And his response to the media then was like, Rich Rod sucks. I'm not working. He's bringing in players I don't care for, blah, blah, blah. And the Michigan fans blew him up. The Ball State fans were like, yeah, clearly that's a problem up there in Michigan. So, I mean, it depends on what side of the coin you fall on.
Sure.
The things that I find ironic is the Ball State fans that were looking at the Michigan fans saying, oh, I can't believe Michigan would say this about one of their former players, regardless of what happened. Ball State fans are doing the exact same thing since Eric Williams left.
Right.
So, you know, it's just, I find that funny. So.
Well, no doubt it is going to be a challenge filling his shoes, but I don't see this being a huge problem. I think we looked preseason at Eric Williams as being one of the stars of the offense.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. So, you know, no team that undergoes a transition like we're going through has it smooth. We have not made it smooth, so move on from here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing. You know, fortunately for Ball State, the running back stable up there is pretty good. Now, I don't think, you know, Corey Sykes is super, super fast, but gets dinged up pretty free. He's dinged up through spring practice and part of fall camp. You've got Barrington Scott, new guy in from Snyder. Donegan is there. Brown is there. So the running back core of Ball State is serviceable by far. The thing about Eric, he reminds me a lot, and not quite as noticeable nationally and not quite as quick, but he reminds me a little bit of like almost a Percy Harvin type where it just, there was something about him. There was some kind of spark about when he played that every time he grabbed the ball, it was just as likely to be an 80-yard run as a 2-yard loss.
Yeah.
So I will miss him. I think Eric was one of the first players that kind of grasped OTP and rep the side a little bit, so
yeah.
I see him go. He's down at Hampton now with Coach Eck. That's where Jason ended up after his tenure at Ball State. So,
yep.
I wish him well. I think it's a shame he didn't finish up as a Cardinal, but if he feels more connected to the Hampton staff and that's a better place for him, then good luck to him.
That's exactly right. All right, what do you expect from the general media for Ball State this year.
Oh, the general media.
Yeah, let's just call it the general media, not you know, the media.
We started OTP, and I think the overwhelming sentiment was that there really wasn't much coverage of Ball State football.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why we started the site was to kind of give, I don't know, not necessarily a voice, but more so just some attention to a program, because we were one of the few BCS schools that didn't have that, sort of that fan-driven voice. Now, I will give the mainstream media folks credit in terms of the 2 years before we started Ball State, or over the pylon, they went to the International Bowl against Rutgers that year right before we did
mm-hmm.
it. But the years before that wasn't great. So I'll give them a pass on that. But I do think it's funny that, you know, you have the Daily News and the Star Press who are in Muncie, right? And the Daily News is on campus. The Star Press is a few blocks from campus. So I think it's incredibly weird that for the 2 years that OTP has been covering it, I think we were clearly the best option for fans wanting consistent and relevant and quick Ball State football news.
Right.
Granted, not a lot of fans probably want that. There's not a huge market for that, but it was there if people needed it. Slowly but surely, I think the Star Press folks have begun to notice, because when people make comments about, you know, why can't you guys do this? Why aren't you more like Over the Pylon? When they have to reference our site and their stories, I know it kills them.
Oh, it hurts.
You know, there was a
bunch of amateurs.
Same with the Daily News. I mean, I can think of, off the top of my head, three or four times when a story was published on the Daily News on their website that was, according to OverThePylon.net, boom, 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 boom.
Like, yeah.
When Limbo got hired, Fox 59 in Indy, TV stations in Charlotte, the Fort Wayne News Sentinel, they weren't referencing the Star Press. And the sad part is they have a Ball State football beat writer. And yet you have a blog writer who doesn't even live in the Midwest scooping story after story after story. Now,
yeah.
The thing that I think this has done for Ball State, and I think in the grand scheme, I will not take credit for all of this, but there are a couple of new things sort of on the rise at Ball State. What I would say is the information coming out of the football program is far different than it was under Stan Parrish. You know, the media relations side of the house at Ball State, kind of the same. Same press releases come in sporadically. It's just kind of how it is. But if you look at the Ball State Sports website, if you look at Twitter, if you look at social media, Facebook, those kinds of things, the Ball State football coverage on those things, fantastic. And that's all in-house to the football program.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. I think as we've stepped the game up, we have forced these folks in mainstream media to really kind of come correct with their coverage, because if they don't, people are not going to go to them for that. And I think it's – I put a pretty big feather in my cap to think that you have a person, one of our writers in Muncie, you, who potentially goes to games when family and work events and things allow, but it's not like you're there in the press room. It's not like you're up in the box with those folks. Like, but I can tell you from experience, when we went down to Auburn and sat up in a press box there with sat right next to Doug Zaleski from the Star Press.
Right.
And Teddy Cahill from the Ball State Daily News, who was the beat writer of football at the time. I have never seen such daggers being shot to me when they realized that we were live blogging at the game and we were tweeting after every series and we were doing XYZ. People don't go to them until the morning after or the day after,
mm-hmm.
a couple days later. They're great for the in-person stuff because obviously neither of us can do that because we have other jobs. But I think that is, if Over the Pylon has done nothing else, I think it has forced these people to take a look at what they're doing. I think it's forced them to reevaluate how they cover Ball State. And to me, if that's the gift that I can give to that program through this website, if that's the gift that you can give to this program through our use of social media and humor and things like that, that's great. We're not mainstream media. We don't cover the same things. I mean, we cover the same games, I guess, and the same news items, but we cover it very differently. And that's kind of the difference between mainstream media and blogs. I could go for hours on that. I do want to send a quick little shout-out because I think it's of note. Tom Davis, the Fort Wayne News Sentinel, has been remarkable in his coverage of Pete Limbo and the Cardinals. Now, I don't know whether Coach Limbo reached out to Tom Davis or vice versa, but I think it is pretty obvious to anybody that kind of follows this program that no longer is the Z-Man up at the Star Press the guy for Ball State football. I would put the Daily News, Star Press, third and fourth probably in terms of if I was a fan and wanted some inside stuff on the program, OTP and Tom Davis and New Sentinel, probably the best places to go for that. And I, obviously the fans that are listening to this podcast think that. But, you know, another new face, Tom Davis. And hopefully, you know, the Star Press. And they hired a new writer, I think. Andrew Walker works for them now, so that's,
yep.
that's cool. I think, yeah, let's go with that.
Let's go with it's cool. It's cool, baby.
The thing that I hope that happens, though,
yeah.
because of this, because of the coverage, there is one thing that has got to improve at Ball State. We had a brief little post on it a week or so ago before all the season preview stuff. The game day atmosphere at Ball State, it got to get better. Would you agree with that?
Wholeheartedly, I would agree with that. The atmosphere last year especially, stagnant isn't even the right word.
But, you know, wins breed atmosphere at Ball State.
Uh-huh.
Always has been the case. But why can't the games be entertaining? Why can't you do something other than the kid walking around and giving out Papa John's pizza for people kicking field goals? Like, that
yeah.
is very amateur hour. It's high school.
Uh-huh.
You know, you go to a place, and I always compare us to big schools, and I hate to do that because, again, it's a different money structure. There's a different sort of entertainment thing going on at those schools, a bigger crowd to begin with, larger audience. I grasp all that. But the interesting thing that I don't know whether people haven't noticed or people don't even believe the same way I do, the crowd will grow if the fun is there. So let's be honest. I don't think, call me a naysayer, I don't think it's possible that Ball State will ever be at a point where we rack out 10, 11, 12 win seasons year after year after year after year.
No, that's not going to happen. And we need to make that clear to, you know, all the fans. Hey, 2008 was a great year, but you're not going to have a bunch of 2008s with this team.
No, 2008 every 5 or 6 years.
Maybe. But I'll tell you what you will get is you'll get honest football.
Right.
And we can get into honest football here in a little bit. But you're going to get kids that are out there for the love of the game. Ball State doesn't send a whole lot of talent to the NFL. You get guys that they know, hey, this is my last 4 or 5 years. I'm going to go out with a bang. And I think that's what has been the best part about watching Ball State is that you got guys here that are not trying to showboat for the next level. They're not trying to pad stats. They're out there to play, and they're playing with each other and for each other.
And I guess my point, if someone sat me down, I don't think they would ever do this because I'm not sure they would know what to do with what I said. Mm-hmm. If Tom Collins or Joe Angora or whomever were to call me and said, Alan, you seem with it. You're on the ball and you're hip. What can we do to improve the atmosphere? What can we do to make Ball State football better? My comment to them is schools in our market size, schools in this conference, schools at this level, IBCS, kind of sideshowish at times, you got to do one of two things. You either got to have the most electrifying, fun, rowdy, ridiculous atmosphere in the stands, no matter how many people are there. I'm talking rap music. I'm talking fun stuff, fireworks, blowouts, crazy stuff. Good tailgate town atmosphere. Open the lots up before, you know, the night before. Let people party and drink all day. That's point A. So you can do that. Or you can do point B in terms of have something very gimmicky about your school or your offense. For example, Virginia Tech. Even if they were awful, people would come watch them because they are ridiculous defense and great special teams. Houston. People would come and watch Houston because they throw the ball everywhere. When Texas Tech sucked, granted it was Texas, people love football there. When Mike Leach was there throwing the ball all over the field and running fun and gun left and right, people would come. Even if they got beat by, you know, 10 points, it was 50 to 40 instead of, you know, 20 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
We got to do one or the other. And I know we don't have jumbotrons. Maybe we can't get them, so be it. But, you know, this, like, 20-minute Proud of Mid-America marching band show before the game, and, like, that doesn't fire football players up. The long-ass halftime show with the band, the big post-game show, like, no, stop. I mean, do something crazy. Do something with, hell, I don't know what the answer is, but what we got is not working. And you can't continue to do the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over.
Well, there's
anything to change.
Plenty of students out in the lot. And they'll leave, they literally will leave when they have to. Such as you have, you know, the first quarter to get in or get out.
Right.
And I think there's got to, I agree with you 100%. There's got to be a way that, hey, yeah, you can't get any beer in the stadium, but put it down for a few minutes. Come on in. We got some cool stuff here for you. not only a good football game, but, you know, whatever it is that they need to market on the field, I agree, it needs to happen.
And that's the thing. You know, we talk about the argument has always been jumbotrons and big TVs.
Mm-hmm.
It does matter. And it not only matters for the fans, it matters for recruits. So there's that. I think the fact that Ball State is trying to make a football atmosphere that's family-friendly. And in my opinion, a family-friendly football atmosphere is in direct competition with a rowdy, crazy, fun, student-heavy crowd. So what to Ball State is more important? To me, you are a hell of a lot more likely to get students there because they're close. If it's fun and it's a Saturday and it's nice out and they got great music and what crazy stuff going on and giveaways and whatever, they're going to show up. The fans on the other side of the field and like the alums and adult section, those committed people that are there every Saturday anyway are going to be there no matter whether they play Wayne Newton or Waka Flocka. So, I mean, it pains me. It pains me, Edge. It makes my heart ache to know that it seems like just do something crazy. Do something different. I mean, what's it going to hurt? I mean, are we going to go from 2,000 a game to 1,700? Oh, that could be the death knell for the BCS.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. All of that stuff together makes, when you talk about the management of the program, the fact that they search cars before you pull into the parking lot for fear that you may have glass, what's to stop the state excise police or the state police from just walking around the locks and looking for glass and saying, hey, put that away? You know, I'm here at the University of Maryland, and the University of Maryland is officially, quote-unquote, a dry campus in terms of they would like alcohol not to be consumed in public.
Mm-hmm.
In your dorm room, if you're 21, whatever. So football game day's here. I mean, if they were to say, public consumption, we're going to frown on that. There would be 8 people here. I mean, even Maryland, the bottom dweller of the ACC, gets, you know, 35 to 45,000 for each home game. But the tailgate lot's ridiculous. I just think that's the answer. You know, cut down on the police yourself and whatever. I know the people got shot 7 or 8 years ago. We're past that. I think we've hit the statute of limitations on that. My other question, West Virginia. So West Virginia now, universally regarded as the worst behaved school in the country in terms of fan behavior, crowd behavior.
And general part of the country.
Correct, right. Just general delinquency amongst their fan base.
Yeah.
They are now serving alcohol at games. I don't know the legal ordinances, right? But the Ball State football stadium, I know it's kind of on campus, but it's not really on campus. Is Ball State a dry campus? Officially? Yeah. I don't think it is.
Not.
You can have alcohol in Elliott Hall. Is that the one right next to the Union?
Yeah.
You can have alcohol there. They have alcohol at the Alumni Center. And the Alumni Center is literally a short pitching wedge to the stadium. Not even a pitching wedge. We'll even go an approach wedge. You can have alcohol at the games if you're over 21. I would show up for that. Would you show up for that?
Yeah, well, come on now.
We show up anyway, but
this is kind of a stupid question.
I would show up to drink tea with the Queen of England if there was alcohol being served.
Sure.
I mean, have booze at the game. See what happens. I mean,
But isn't it a MAC rule?
I know it's an SEC rule.
But isn't it a MAC rule?
I don't know.
We need to check into this. I'd urge anybody to post a comment when this is posted to clear us up on this. Anybody that's very familiar with MAC regulations.
I would be surprised. I know of one conference that definitely has a no alcohol, that's the SEC. That's because they had some DUI accidents and a couple kids killed probably 15 years ago. A lot of campuses have rules where they can't have alcohol served on campus, and that sort of changes the game. Like the University of Louisville, I think they could, if they were playing at, they have a brand new arena downtown at the Yum Center. The Yum Center, they serve alcohol there. And I don't think it's a coincidence that in terms of profitability, the University of Louisville Athletic Program is one of the most profitable basketball programs in the country. And why is that? Because they can serve $8 beers at their basketball games. Not only does that bring fans in to have a few beers and watch some basketball, you get a cut of the alcohol sales. So I just think that maybe that's an option. And I'm not encouraging people to just get poop-faced on the game day and go crazy. But I think, truthfully, it's if that's going to get people there, get them there. To me, the end will always justify the means. And for me, it is more important for the football program to grow, the fan support to build, than for us to look like hoity-toity, alcohol-free, we police ourselves, and we're 100% safe. Because newsflash, everybody in those stands, even the adults, at least a little bit intoxicated by the time they get there. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't be there.
Might be a little bit.
Right. I mean, that's just that's what you do. I mean, you tailgate, you get a little wasted, you go to the game. I mean, hell, go to any school, even at IU, they tailgate and drink. And if they do it at IU, everybody does.
They dispose of their beer bottles properly too.
On Ball State fans' heads.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know. Sometimes you can't make it out.
Sometimes you eat the bear, sometimes the bear eats you.
Sometimes the bear eats you, that's right.
All right.
Quite funny, though. We talk about Limbo.
Yeah.
We have been in a little bit of a Twitter conversation, I would say, with Coach Limbo. I've been an ardent supporter on Twitter of getting Coach Limbo his own Twitter account.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I think that would be entertaining.
Well, how about this? I don't know why not.
And that's what I'm saying. I think it would be like Joe Pye with a Twitter, Stan Parrish with a Twitter. Not going to be good. Even Kevin Wilson, although who knows, with a Twitter. Could be good, could not be. I don't know. But there's something about Coach Limbo. A, he's engaging. A, he's outgoing. Or B, he's outgoing. C, he strikes me as kind of young, kind of with it. I feel like if there ever was a coach that would give tweet gold, I don't think he'd hit Mike Leach level, but he'd be up there. We asked Coach Limbo's staff, I guess, and according to this, is straight from the HBC, which, as we all know, stands for head ball coach. Straight from the head ball coach. We got some other things that we'll throw on the site. If you've been following us on Twitter, we retweeted it. But we asked him who he would like to have play him in a movie. And I had my already pretty cemented assumption
what
I was going to respond with.
Okay.
Because it's, in my opinion, very, very obvious. And I will give credit to Edge. You were the first one that sort of pointed this out to me after he got hired.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. So Coach Limbo says if he was, they were going to make a Limbo story, a walking tall with Pete Limbo. He thinks that the actor that should play him would be none other than Robert De Niro. And that struck me as a little odd. Strike you as odd? Strikes me as a little odd.
Maybe Bobby D in the Taxi Driver era. But come on, man, the guy's like 70 now.
Maybe Raging Bull, Bobby. I mean, here's the thing. They're both New Yorkers. I think comes from Long Island, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Or Strong Island, is this? And I may be wrong on that. So if someone listens to this and passes on to Coach Limbo, that asshole said you're from Long Island. I think that's where he's from. Don't quote me on that. So maybe that's the connection. Bobby D strikes me as kind of a very sort of archetypal New York sort of person.
Yeah.
But man, Bobby D. You gotta give this people to listen to this.
I'm gonna give this out. Okay. But I want to preface this by saying this is not an insult by any means.
You preface a statement by saying this is not an insult by any means. The translation is this is probably gonna be a little insult.
This is probably gonna make you mad, but you need to hear me out. Oh, I've said that so many times, gotten so much trouble. How about New Yorker? How about John Lovitz? Now, hear me out on this. It sounds kind of goofy, sounds kind of stupid, Saturday Night Live, but what if this is his Oscar-winning role? We're talking Bill Murray in Lost in Translation. He switches from screwball comedy and goofiness to drama, and it's like, wow, what? Where's this guy been? I think this could work. I really do. I think we need to get some indie film director and get this going before it's too late. I really do.
Well, it's funny. I always thought it would be, and I'm biased obviously because I love the Cardinals, but I always thought it would be an incredibly interesting kind of behind the scenes look at sort of a mid level, and I've used that term extremely optimistically, with a sort of a mid level program. And just kind of what goes into a season. I wish I was, financially stable enough to be able to just quit my job for 6 months and say, hey, I'm going to go do a documentary about Ball State football. Now, granted, no one may watch that. But to me, I think it would, you see all the time these specials and all-access stuff with Florida and Oklahoma and Notre Dame and those kinds of places. Glistening locker rooms, gorgeous weight equipment. Awesome pep rallies, great student support. I would think it would be such a dichotomy to sort of look at a mid-major program and sort of the difference between, these kids don't live the same kind of life as these other guys that they play on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get the luxury of a gorgeous, basically athletics dorm. They don't get the luxury of expansive locker rooms and weight rooms, although the weight room is getting better.
Yeah.
Expansive, you know, just facilities and coaches' offices that have huge bay windows over the stadium. And it's just, you watch those things and, you know, watching the Oklahoma All Access or the Florida All Access, I see that and I think to myself, even now, right, as much as I love Ball State, if I was a high school athlete with the same amount of love and fire, I grew up in Muncie, loved the Cardinals my entire life, and I go and take a recruiting visit to Ball State, and then I go and take a recruiting visit to Florida, and I see what they have, it's a no-brainer. It's, I mean, that battle's over before the first salvo is even fired.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be an incredibly interesting case study, and I hope they do that at Ball State. I know that they're granting some quote-unquote, all access for SportsLink, the sports media program at Ball State, which is a fantastic program. But I am kind of concerned that anytime that you're a student enrolled in the college and the athletic department is rubber-stamping what you're doing, at some point you're going to be venturing dangerously close to just being kind of a shill for the mission of the athletic department. Those sorts of behind-the-scenes things are only good when you get the good end of that.
Right.
I just think that would be ridiculously fascinating. I think at Ball State, something like an East Carolina or an Idaho or something like, I mean, just anything like that to me would be just unbelievable.
Right. Well, let's one more
on that.
I'm all over it. One more Ball State topic, and then we need to move on to the national landscape. Breaking news, I guess, this morning that Maury Manny is retiring after the 2011-2012 football and basketball seasons. Your thoughts?
I will miss his crazy sweaters. No, Maury to me is Ball State's Joe Paterno.
Yeah.
He knew for the last 3 to 4, and that's being gracious, 3 to 4 years, that Maury was a lot of his game, if he was ever on his game. Even when we were in college, listening to him call a game, I wanted to break things, just because never knew who had the ball, never knew what the score was. I mean, catch things would be the wrong names, like Maury. But having said all that,
the wrong names by decades sometimes.
Yeah, having said all that, and being sort of negative that way. And I will be honest, I grew up with Kaywood Ledford at UK, one of the best in the business. So that's my measuring stick.
Yeah.
So Maury was not a great play-by-play man, at least when I listened to him. However, he was Ball State. I mean, there is not one single person that is a true Ball State fan, either basketball or football, that can't say they would know Maury's voice instantaneously when they heard it.
Sure.
They know that he pissed Cardinal and White every weekend.
Yep.
So I'm sad to see him go. I think it'll be interesting, man, because it got to the point, and I will out myself, I quit listening to Maury's broadcasts several years ago when we started doing some stuff, the live blogs and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right.
I would always go to WCRD. I will throw a small shout-out to Pat Boylan, who's the play-by-play guy on CRD. Fantastic, fantastic play-by-play guy. I don't think he's even graduated. He's still a student. So there is some in the works. I don't think they'd ever hire a student, but wouldn't be a bad thing. I'm just saying, he does a good job. And he knows who has the ball.
Hey, that's one of the most important things of painting a picture over the radio waves, you know?
I mean, as a Muncie resident.
Yeah.
Maury is Muncie. Maury is Ball State, correct?
Yeah, he is. He unquestionably the epitome of Muncie and Ball State Cardinals. It's gonna be different. Let's put it that way.
I vote for Brent Musburger.
I think we can get him.
You're looking live at the 800 people at Schumann's Radio.
Okay, let's move on to the national news here. There's a lot that's gone on in the off season. It's going to be tough to really start nailing down. So I want to cover, let's say, 3 topics.
Okay.
And the first one I do want to start off with is overall picture, coaches that already are on the hot seat.
Well, I would say Al Golden at Miami is probably up there.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I feel bad for him more than the other coach. He's not on the hot seat at all. Truthfully, I think Mark Richt at Georgia is up there.
Okay.
Been rumored for a while to be on the hot seat. I think that expectations at Georgia, a little different this year. So he's up there. Honestly, oh, man. That's a hard question for me, I think.
Okay, I'll tell you what. from the end of last season to this season, what, a sixth of all the coaches have been replaced?
Yeah.
Let's say that that's conservative. I think it's somewhere around 23 to 26 new head coaches. And I think, quite honestly, this year, a lot of the bottom feeder coaches that held on to their jobs but are consistently ranked among the worst in the FBS, they're going to find themselves unemployed. I think right up there is Paul Wolf of Washington State, which I've said for 2 years this guy needs to go.
He's an alum. I think that's why they're keeping him. And Washington State's an abysmal, abysmal place to try to coach.
Well, he still probably needs to go. I think Ron English has had his last hurrah, unless he puts up something from Eastern Michigan. You know, he's 2-22 in three seasons, and unfortunately, one of those was against us last year where they beat us by three. So,
well,
yeah, we'll try not to talk about that. Probably semi-surprising, I would say Danny Hope at Purdue.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think his time is just about up. And don't be surprised if Penn State decides to part ways with Joe Pa.
I think it's,
don't be surprised.
With Joe Pa, it's got to be on his terms. They will never. He could go 0-40 straight, and they're never going to find him. The thing that I think about the hot seat, though, there's a couple of coaches that it's not necessarily about what they've done overall for their career. Mm-hmm. I think it's more so about what they've done lately. You know, you look at Houston Nutt from Mississippi. For me, he's the person that has great expectations this year. He got to reach them. Otherwise, they're going to flip. Your SEC, you can't take a couple years off.
Yeah.
I think, truthfully, this is more about money in my eyes than wins and losses,
mm-hmm.
especially historical records. To me, one of the coaches that not a lot of people seem to be talking about is Mack Brown at Texas.
Okay.
Had an abysmal year a couple years ago. Missed the bowl.
Yeah, what happened last year?
I'm sorry?
Last year.
Right. And
yeah.
He makes almost $6 million a year. I mean, Texas is one of those schools, they're kind of like Notre Dame, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. If you've won 8 straight national championships, you miss a couple bowl games and you're making $6 million a year, you better start working on your resume.
Yeah.
So I think he's in trouble. I think there are other schools that potentially could, but I think no one, even like a Turner Gill at Kansas, he has a bad year, very possible, but I don't think he's one of those coaches that I think go into the year where the athletic director says, I want to give this guy a vote of confidence. You know, I don't think it's quite to that level.
You think
within 2 or 3 weeks who those coaches are.
You think this year might be the year that we find out if Mike Loxley is finally able to be fired from New Mexico? I mean, for God's sake.
It is getting a bit extreme.
Yeah.
I go,
I don't know what more that guy can do to get fired, but they need to go ahead and make a move. One more I'm just going to throw out there is Rick Neuheisel from UCLA. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Same
yeah.
thing. Major market, major program, a lot of salary. You know, and the fact that USC has not been good. You know, the UCLA job for me was always one of the better jobs in college football because as USC was kicking ass and taking names, you could always go 8-9 wins and say, hey, you know, we try, but I mean, this team across town, they keep taking all their recruits. What do you want me to do? So that was always a crutch, but that's no longer the case at USC.
Mm-hmm.
So he seems to be missing a very golden opportunity, much like his golden flowing locks.
Perfect. Perfect segue into Golden, by the way. What's Al Golden going to do at Miami this year?
Oh, man.
What do you do with this program at this point? Do you just, you know what, we're going to ignore everything, let's just get on the field and practice until they tell us we can?
I think they have to. I mean, I think at this point, it's totally out of Al Golden's control, obviously.
Oh, sure.
And the other thing that I find funny is that no one bothered to tell him that this was going on. Not, hey, we've been cheating. More so, hey,
this might be coming down.
There's some Yahoo guys kind of poking around
a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, so for me, if I was Hal Golden, that would piss me off to begin with.
Right.
What's going to frustrate me even further is when they suspend 13 or 14 of my players. Man, this just goes to show you. The grass is not always greener, but the cash always is.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to be honest with you, this is... I read that report the night that it came out.
Yep.
And it was literally the most skin crawl inducing.
It's disgusting, wasn't it?
Oh, my Lord. If the NCAA is not going to use the death penalty on this case, on these circumstances, then they need to take the death penalty off the books. Because if you can't use it here, what is it going to take? I mean,
have
like a human trafficking ring out of the locker room before you. This to me is probably the worst thing I've ever been witness to or read about since I've been alive. Now SMU was before when I was 4 years old. So, this is bad.
SMU was bad. This is by far worse. But, you know, I have to play devil's advocate here because it'd be kind of boring listening to both of us agree. I fully agree that they deserve the death penalty, but there is so much money involved in this to be lost by giving them the death penalty. I don't see them doing that. I think they should. I don't see it happening.
I don't either. I mean, it gets down to money. Because if you think about it, for the ACC and the NCAA to do that, so not only does it affect Miami in terms of going forward, because it takes at least, I would say, in my opinion, it takes 4 to 5 years to rebuild even to a somewhat competitive level for each year your death penalty.
Hey, man.
So if you put them on a 2-year death penalty, you're going to have a 10-year span before you're even remotely competitive.
You think so? Because, SMU didn't get to a bowl game until, 25 years after theirs? So,
I mean, they had no history. They were literally awful, awful, awful. Excellent, excellent death penalty. So a little bit different. But for the Miami situation, so
I guess, you think we'd be well into our 40s?
Yeah. I mean, our university, who's our season opener this year?
Yeah.
Miami. So if they said tomorrow, hey, guess what, Miami? Your death penalty from this point until this point next year, Maryland just lost a poop ton of money. The ACC just lost a poop ton of money because the ESPN money goes somewhere else.
And it's probably important to note that anything that happens is not going to happen this year.
True, but even, I mean, it's just all of
the... You can't mess up the schedules and TV contracts now.
Yeah, the TV contracts going forward, they become less valuable.
Yeah.
You have to scramble for scheduling. Bowl games, what are they going to do there? I mean, there's just so many ramifications that unfortunately, and in my opinion, very regrettably, come down to dollars and cents, and the NCAA stopped being about amateur athleticism a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly about money.
And
as long as money gets impacted, they will do whatever they can to keep people from getting hosed. You know, look at the recruits that come to campus and what's considered a violation, what isn't, how they have mandated their enforcement. The thing that I think is the most troubling thing about all of this is that the athletic director at Miami, when all of this was going down, Paul D was the head of the infractions committee at the NCAA when they were investigating USC and Reggie Bush, when they were investigating Derrick Rose in Memphis, and they said things like strict liability and high-profile recruits deserve high-profile enforcement and compliance. What a hypocrite. That, to me, is the most troubling thing. It's not the boats and hoes that Miami had. It was the hypocrite of the program. My God, man, that to me was the worst thing. I mean, it's probably not the worst thing in all reality when you have booster-funded abortions, but, I mean, my goodness gracious.
Whew. Yeah. To be honest, I think whatever comes of this situation will probably give the NCAA and its detractors reason to revamp this whole situation.
I'm not sure the NCAA is going to make it through this. And when I say that, there is such a growing groundswell of support by the major conferences in terms of the SECs, the Big Tens, what's left of the Big 12, to say, maybe we don't need the NCAA. Because these schools are not bound to the NCAA. They've agreed to be part of it. But they're not legislatively bound to be part of the NCAA. So what's to stop them, theoretically, from saying, hey, us 12 schools in the SEC, and these 12 schools over here, and these 12 schools over here formulating 50 to 65 teams, we appreciate the BCS and all because that's independent of the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take all of that, and basically we're just going to form our own NCAA. Thanks for playing. I mean, what's to stop? And the answer is there isn't anything. So when the NCAA gets to a point where the schools involved in it say, this is not working for us, you can bet something better will come along.
I mean,
it's a better mousetrap sometimes.
Got that right. Well, speaking of change, and I want to get – this will be the last major topic before we get into some pick time. Texas A&M kind of courting the SEC, and the SEC saying, "Hey, you're not cute enough." What'd you feel about that one?
Well, I don't think the SEC was saying you're not cute enough. I will say this. I am not a lawyer, right? So I think there is something to be said, though, for the SEC can't be seen as the reason, because of an offer, because of an implied offer, because of anything like that, that Texas A&M broke their association with the Big 12, contracts they may have with the Big 12. If that's the case, if it's deemed that the SEC interfered with that and caused that contract to be broken, that's what's called tortious interference, or tortious interference, whatever, I don't know the exact legal term.
It has something to do with tort.
Right. So anything that's intentional interference with contractual relations is going to be that.
Mm-hmm.
So I found it ironic that a day before A&M has their big meeting with the Regents to say, maybe we should break apart from the Big 12, the SEC comes out and says, nope, we are totally not interested. We have nothing to do with this. You know, whatever you guys decide, probably going to be, totally independent of us. Because, you know, we don't have an offer for you. Now, having said all that, once A&M says, we out, deuces to the Big 12, I am quite positive that there will be quick movement for someone, maybe a conference from the Southeast, to come sweep them up. And I think that will be the first domino that falls for major, major conference shakeups in terms of, I see this moving towards the Super Conference. And we worried about that last year a little bit. But if you think about it, you have the Pac-12 that will always be some form of that conference because it's just out west. They're kind of their own thing, and that's just how they do it. You have the SEC will always be part of the Southeast with some remnants pulled in from here and there. You have the Big Ten will always be the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking at four leagues, roughly 16 teams apiece in these super conferences. So we're taking care of the Big Ten. We've taken care of the SEC. We've taken care of the Pac-12. That leaves the remnants of the Big 12. That leaves the Big East. That leaves the ACC to kind of fight amongst themselves to figure out who's going to be that fourth conference. Now, having said that, I think it will not be terrible, and it will not be unlikely if the SEC poaches out Texas A&M and potentially three schools from the ACC. Georgia and Florida and South Carolina have all said, we want no other schools from our state in this conference. So that throws out things like Clemson. That throws out things like
Florida State, yeah.
But there is a school in the Southeastern Conference footprint that is not represented.
Oh, I love the anticipation. It's like butt fierce.
To me personally, I think they would look for something to bolster their basketball brand in the SEC. And I would not be surprised at all, young man, if NC State, Duke, and North Carolina all came over the SEC.
Hmm.
You have the addition of A&M in the SEC West. You have the addition of Duke, North Carolina, and NC State to the SEC. And the movement of maybe Vanderbilt over the West.
You think North Carolina, okay. They're going to want to bring that baggage in?
I think it's a package deal with all of them.
Yeah?
And I think if you're talking about baggage, I think Duke has far more baggage than North Carolina. It's just...
Oh, yeah.
North Carolina's been...
I remember that.
Basketball-wise. Well, aside from that one time they were in trouble basketball-wise. But
yeah.
For football-wise, what they did is, I mean, kind of SEC-ish. So really, they kind of took the training wheels off. I'm quite pleased with that. I mean,
right.
I think it's a dangerous thing. But we talked about earlier about the NCAA and how that kind of breaks apart. These schools are beginning to kind of realize they are leaving a lot of money on the table for the NCAA to grab, for the conferences to grab, for all this kind of stuff. So it will take some sort of, you know, I struggle to use the word revolution, but sort of grassroots movement to get things sort of righted.
Sure.
I think that is the only way you're going to see athletes get paid. And I do think you will see that in the next 10 to 20 years.
The athletes getting paid.
I do
want to cover this, but I want to cover this maybe next week or the week after.
We'll cover it on a bye week or something like that. But
I totally want to cover this.
Yeah.
Love it. Let's get to some of our picks before we wrap things up. And we definitely hope that this podcast has been, you know, threat level Argyle.
I will say, man, shout out to the Oklahoma fans that listen to this. Good, good ups on you. You'll be there. Are you excited for this?
You know what? I'm jacked.
Are you more excited now?
No, I've been excited since, to be quite honest, when I heard that it was in the works. My in-laws are all from Oklahoma. Okay, they all went to Oklahoma University. They're Sooners, so I'm married into a Sooner family. So going out there, I fully expect, and you Sooner fans that are listening, I fully expect to be treated well. I don't want any beer bottles thrown in my face. But I'm looking to have a good time. I'm absolutely excited about going to Norman and seeing a game there. It's gonna be a fun trip.
I will expect lots of photos.
Oh, totally. I'll totally be rocking the Ball State gear too. So don't be worried.
Oklahoma festivities on photographic evidence.
Yeah. Well,
they got a tough hurdle to clear though, because I got to be honest with you, man. The trip to Auburn a couple of years ago, man, tough.
Could have been.
Tough sledding to beat that trip, because those fans, legit, my friend, legit. Very nice. I'm sure we'll get the same treatment out there. I kind of wish I was going now. They'll try to find a cheap flight out to wherever the flights go.
Yeah. All right.
I'll chop our OTP1 out there, and we'll be good to go.
Yeah, well, that reminds me. Are you going to pick up your chopper at the Catalina Wine Mixer, or...
Like a Catalina Wine Mixer, man.
All right. Right now, who's your Heisman pick?
You know,
right off the gate.
The easy road.
I'll take the easy road.
Andrew Luck. And that's what I'm going to say. Okay. He's the guy.
All right. I'll go with Landry Jones.
Of course you would.
I got to.
Well, here's my question. Say Ball State pulls probably the upset of the decade, and I'm being generous there.
Mm-hmm.
And they beat Oklahoma, who will be ranked number one, I'm assuming, when we play. And they have a chance. A small, albeit a chance, but a small chance. If they beat Oklahoma, does that totally ruin his chance for a Heisman?
Yeah.
You think?
100%.
So we can actually pee on two parades that day.
Yeah, we potentially,
now,
yeah.
Now, sir, it is go time.
Yeah, exactly. National champion right out of the gate. Who do you got?
Oh, good Lord. I want to pick Oklahoma. I really do. Mm-hmm. So it would be nice to say, hey, we played the eventual national champion.
Yeah.
And we played them tight and or beat them. But you know me. What's my favorite conference?
The SEC.
The SEC, exactly. I am going to go with Rammer Jammer, Yellow Hammer. Give them hell, Alabama.
Yeah, I completely anticipate an Oklahoma-Alabama championship game.
And I will be honest with you, sir.
Yeah.
This is going to infuriate Oklahoma fans if they're listening. If I was a betting man, and I have Oklahoma against an SEC team, against a killer, killer defense with Saban and a tie, we've seen that play before. And I know what the third act of that play is.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a great game, but I just think that Alabama's defense is awfully tough. And SEC speed, brother.
So you got Alabama. I'm probably going to have to say Alabama. I'm just a big fan of the way they show up on the field every week. So.
You said Alabama?
Yeah, I'll say Alabama.
You're going to pick the same national championship today?
I know. It sucks.
Oh.
It may change, and I just... Man. This just in.
I knew it was you all along.
This just in. RV, his Heisman prediction?
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it's Dane Crist. Whatever. I can't read what he wrote.
It's actually Theo Riddick.
Yeah.
With a close second to Sierra Wood.
Okay.
I think third will probably be Dane Crist. Fourth, Tommy Rees. And fifth will be Nate Davis.
No, what? And national championship game, he's got Notre Dame versus Ball State.
Yeah, he actually has Notre Dame's first team versus Notre Dame's second team. Which
is possible.
I guess, yeah. They call that the blue gold game. They've already quit playing Notre Dame. You've already won the national championship.
All right. Last pick. Where do we fall in the MAC this year? Or where do we rise in the MAC this year?
You know, I'm going to... God, see, I hate to do this because when you write it, you can always go back and edit it.
Sure.
When you say it...
Yeah, but see, I have this cool technology, man. I can piece all your stuff together. We're good.
So I think, well, we'll be 8-4. truthfully, I think that I'll go bold. I will say, oh God, I hate this. 7-5. I think we finished probably second in the MAC in our division. And I think we go to a bowl. God damn it.
You think we go to a bowl? Pete Limbo's first year and we're going bowling.
I think if we don't go to a bowl, it will be because no bowl wants to have us, not because we're not eligible.
Sure. All right, so I'm going to go...
I say we go to bowl. I say we'll be bowl eligible, 7-5, second in our division.
I'm going to say we're going to be 6-6, third in our division.
We're doing this again. We did this in 2009. We are doing the exact same thing 2 years later.
I'll say 6-6, but...
We both think there's no hope we get to where we predicted it. We're back to where we were
in
2009, and we're going to have angry...
But you know what?
LOL cats. It's going to be a nightmare.
It will be a nightmare. So, you know what? But see, I don't want to piss on these guys' parade out here.
It's true.
They got something going on. We don't want to bring them down.
I concur.
Let's just say 6-6. Let's be cool about it. Let's be cool, baby.
And that bitch be cool.
I'll say they finished third.
Okay.
I think that's... I just got to play conservative. But I think it's an optimistic 6-4-8, 6-6. I think it's an optimistic season that, you know what, there were flashes of brilliance.
Okay.
And a good, just kind of some good feelings for things to come for next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think, here's my question. You said you have us finishing third in the West.
Yeah.
Who finishes above us?
Oh.
Because I had us finishing second. So there's only one team I gotta come up with. And that's easy. That's Toledo. Toledo's awfully good.
You got Toledo?
Got Toledo.
See, I have Toledo, but I think they're... The MAC is so weird, man. It's so weird. Because at any time, you know, your Central Michigan could blow the doors off. At any time, Western could do it. Western, hell, they did it to us last year. What, they scored twice in the first minute?
That was awful.
Oh, that was brutal.
I was thinking about that the other day, and I saw some homecoming pictures from last year.
I was, too, and then I started drinking.
Oh, my gosh. That was... I've been to a lot of bad games in my lifetime, both at Ball State and at Kentucky. I can't say that I remember being as just as I was that game, because I was like finally back on campus for the first time in a year or so. I was really excited about getting the game, and I mean, that totally felt like somebody walked up and punched me right in the coin purse right after the kickoff. And
sure.
It sucked.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, it's throwing darts at this point and seeing what name you hit. But I think you're going to see a Northern Illinois or a Central Michigan or a Western Michigan up at the top of that.
Yeah.
And until I get to see them play, I mean, I'm not going to stick to my guns on any of that. But I think we're both in agreement that Toledo is going to be up there.
Yep.
But one of those three I just mentioned, it hurts, but they're going to be up there.
Yeah, the one thing that gives me hope about this Cardinal team, and I guess I'll end my comments about both of them, is that I've always been told, and I've always thought, that the team with the best chance of doing better than you expect is the team that has a kick-ass offensive line. Mm-hmm. I'll be damned if Ball State doesn't have a great offensive line this year.
Mm-hmm. They do.
They got a great offensive line and a good secondary. And the teams in the MAC that I think we are really worried about, like the Toledos and the Western Michigans, what do they do a lot? They're not a running team. They're a passing team. So if our secondary can hold its ground and do something special, the offensive line makes the offense go, I'm just saying.
Right. So what about the East?
Oh man, East is a shit show. See, I got to get back on my like kind of high PG-13.
To be clear.
little, you know, we got to knock the rust off this puppy, man. It's been a good 8 months since we've been podcasting.
Yeah, it is.
In terms of the East, Ohio?
Yeah.
I'll go with Ohio.
I mean, I'm also going to go with Ohio.
I kind of want to pick Miami. They did pretty well. I like them. But, yeah, I got to
go. They're going through transition, too, so.
Yeah, true. It's the MAC. Everybody goes through transition. If it's not players, it's coaches.
That's true.
I mean, not once. The only time I remember a team that had consistent coaching and consistent players year to year was back when Marshall and Miami were kicking ass and taking names. I mean, it seems like you have one or the other for maybe, or both for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
One or the other from that point going forward. So, I don't know, man. The MAC is fun for that reason, but it's infinitely infuriating for the exact same reason.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go with Ohio.
Okay.
And I'm probably going to have to go with, you know, one of four. I know that sounds stupid since there's six in the West, but Toledo, Northern Illinois, Central Michigan, Western Michigan against Ohio. But I see, unfortunately, the East running away this year.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you a Stephen A. Smith. However, I think I'm going to go with Toledo.
Really?
Yeah, man. That offense is scary good.
Okay.
They got a year in that system now. It's a lot of timing, a lot of experience coming back, and I think that's big. As much as it pains me to say it, because truthfully, in terms of the MAC, Toledo fans we've interacted with, not so great in terms of what they expect out of their football program. But you know, I will go with Toledo as much as pains me to say.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? Buffalo may surprise us, Edge.
Oh God. Don't say that.
I was being facetious.
Oh God, that was awful, by the way. But it was good to beat him.
Went back. If you get a chance, and I would encourage our readers to do this also.
Sure.
Get a chance. Go back to December 5th or so in 2008. Post it on OTP on the calendar, and just read that 2 week stretch. From when the MAC championship happened to when Coach Hoke left and the bowl game, I can safely say, even reading it a couple nights ago, was painful.
Sure.
It brought back a flood of just like, oh, I hate these people. So if you ever need some fire stoked, those would be the posters.
Yeah, and we definitely encourage the players to check those out because fuel, baby.
Fuel, burn, baby, burn.
Yeah. So, all right, Alan, do you have any final words after our first podcast of 2011?
You know, I think the OTP cast 3.1 now, off to a solid start this year. This is our fourth year covering Ball State, so we are in our senior season, assuming we didn't redshirt.
Yeah, we're redshirt juniors, baby. We're coming back.
That is great. I'm foregoing my senior year of blog eligibility to declare for the professional blog draft. I think it's going to be a, if nothing else, Edge, even if the program does not do well on the field in terms of results, I am just extremely excited to see that there is a buzz about the program again. The players seem to finally be happy to be playing football,
mm-hmm.
and not just going through the motions. And the students and the fans, everybody, just seems to be a real positive type thing. And I think, to me, sometimes that's just as, if not more, important than W's on the ledger.
Sure. All right. Well, hey, it's been great talking with you. Great catching up. And after 8 months, it's really good to be back.
It is.
And very excited about September 3rd, which we will get into next week.
Sir.
So look forward to that, and keep reading Over the Pylon. We got a little bit more preseason information for you, and special shout out to the four non-conference opponents that we previewed this week. And most fans, they were pretty gracious for what we had to say about, well, I don't know, IU didn't really, nobody really say anything about that. But
I will give them a shout, though.
Okay.
The IU blog on SB Nation, Crimson Quarry.
Yeah. Right?
So Crimson Quarry, I hope I'm saying that right. Crimson Quarry. The guy said, reading this preview, and it's hypothetical assumptions about Ball State and IU and the barbs they throw. Ball State sent out to IU reminds me of this photo, and it's from Spaceballs, where the guy is holding the dude out as he's swinging his lightsaber.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, man. As much as I am bitter about Indiana University, that comment from that anonymous blog commenter.
You win, my friend.
That was epic win.
Yeah.
Gonna give him props on that one.
Yeah, he wins that one.
Which totally blows my mind even further. So.
Are you serious?
I know.
Wow. So die hard.
Chicks dig bloggers, baby, for the win.
Well, thanks to that lady.
I suppose.
It's a lady that's blogging. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, kudos to you. Thanks to the Oklahoma fans. That was pretty cool to read some of that stuff.
Sir.
South Florida. Good as always. Army, nothing but respect. That's why we gave you meatloaf. That was kind of funny, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, man, good pulls. Kudos to Etch for the pulls on the music and fantastic way to kind of start the season.
Sure.
I was always stoked, let's be honest. I kind of live for fall. But, yeah, man, doing that and kind of getting some into it. I'm digging it, man. I'm ready to get to it next Saturday, Lucas Oil.
Well, I'll be there.
I will not be. I'll be at a wedding.
Well, I will be there.
Clearly, that seems like a great day to have a wedding. But I digress.
Wow. Who schedules their life around college football?
I have told most of my friends that if they get married on an autumn fall, autumn Saturday, I probably will not be there.
In fact, right.
If I got married on an autumn Saturday, I probably wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And that's probably
I can probably see that.
Not married.
There you go. All right. This has been OTPcast 3.1. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week for the preview on IU. And on behalf of Alan, this is Edge. Thanks for listening. Rock on and game on.